Welcome to Critical Issues Commentary, the radio ministry of Twin City Fellowship. I'm Pastor Bob DeWay, and today I'm speaking with Brian Flynn, the author of Running Against the Wind, The Transformation of a New Age Medium, and His Warning to the Church. This is part 7 in this series of broadcasts that we're doing based on Brian's book. Last week we were talking about how, as a new Christian, Brian begin to witness to people and even his ex-wife, and then how they were sharing back with him some of the same things he used to do to try to keep Christians from contending with him for the faith. So, and then we talked about how it's important to witness the truth to people even when they don't believe it. So welcome back, Brian.
Oh, glad to be here.
So today, as we promised, we're going to talk about some of these issues. We're not going to give you an exhaustive description of every one of the New Age practices out there, but we want to cover many of them so that people understand that these things are New Age and are dangerous, and give at least a brief description and why they are practiced by different people in the New Age. So, Brian, what's the unifying idea, if you could think about that? Okay, we have all these different practices we're going to talk about, but what's the key thing that makes people want these practices?
It's about personal autonomy. It's freedom to be able to commit any sin that you wish, that there is no guilt, that there is no judgment, that in a sense, I am the power over my own life. I am, in a sense, a God. I get to rule my life the way I wish. But the caveat is always, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else.
Okay, so that's the basic philosophy. Why all these practices that we're going to talk about? Why do people dream these things up?
I think it's simply because when you don't have real truth and you're only limited to what man can dream up, they're always half measures. They're somewhat satisfying. Obviously, if they didn't work at all, people would quit them quickly. But we're really trying to create a world for ourselves in which we are autonomous by meager means. What I mean by meager is ones that are not like God. God has created the means for full satisfaction and understanding our world. We have created poor substitutions to create that same feeling.
I wonder also if this doesn't somehow go back to the Garden of Eden when Satan offered Adam and Eve this, or Eve in particular, this tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Right.
So the idea is that there's a secret knowledge out there, and that's what occult means. And Satan is telling people that if they just had that particular knowledge, they'd have power.
Correct.
That they could be like God.
Yes, and that's a very seductive thing, and that is really the desire. Now, if you ask people in that way, they probably deny it. Oh, no, I'm not trying to be a god, but really they are. You know, a lot of people, it's not that they're trying to find God, but I truly believe that they're really hiding from the real one.
Well, that's what Adam and Eve did.
Exactly.
Well, so they're looking for secret information or at least some answers for their life. So one of the places they go is these occult activities, and you listed a bunch of them in your book, one of which was astrology. What's that all about?
Astrology is based upon the movement of the stars, and that based upon the time of our birth and the position that we're born on the planet, that there is certain events that are lined up for you. Now, when you go to the newspaper, you're essentially taking 30 or 31 days, and millions of people that are born on a particular day or that particular month, born on different sides of the planet, all sharing the same outcomes in their daily lives. I think that's laughable.
It's a little hard to believe.
It is, but then a true astrologer would laugh at it too and say, well, you can't really base it upon that. Because when they do a true reading on your astrological position, they go by minutes. So it's, you know, because one astrologer told me it's what will, you know, the world shifts every 4 minutes. So you have to have your exact birth time. And then, of course, the latitude and longitude of where you were born on the planet. Then they could look back and find out the positioning of the stars and where those stars line up. Means that therefore they can predict some type of future and the type of personality you are.
Now, I think originally in the ancient world, this came out of course, the mythology that there were these different gods.
Right.
And then when they saw planets, of course, they had a lot of time out there without streetlights in those days.
Yeah.
And you could notice that there were certain celestial objects that didn't follow the same pattern as the rest of them.
Right.
But that was the planets.
Correct.
So then those planets were deemed to be, you know, in certain houses or certain...
Right. So if Mars moves into the house of Sagittarius, in other words, Mars is positioned in the star pattern for Sagittarius or Taurus or whoever, or the twins that they've all named them, then that has some significance. And each of the planets has a particular meaning, personality, etc. So we've been subdivided into 12 categories. Oh, you're a Gemini, you're a Taurus, you're a Cancer, etc. And each of them supposedly has similar personalities. But then, of course, that's impossible, too. You can't have everyone divided into 12 personality types that are all going to match up perfectly. Then they'll say, well, that's because your planet Mars is in your house of Sagittarius, and that's why you're quick to anger.
Okay.
So, you know, all of this quite irrational things that they come up with. But on some ways, I think it appeals to our ego when we read about ourselves and go, oh, yeah, that's me right there. Boy, I'm just like that.
So people are always looking for some sort of information about self.
Correct.
And thinking that if they have that, they might be able to make a better decision or avoid some bad outcome.
And then, of course, yes. And then they're looking, then they take it from there to looking forward to figure out what my future is so I can make a determination. Now, of course, this is very important to a person that has been brainwashed by our school system to believe that we were not creatures created by God, but we crawled out of some primordial pool and were dropped on our head here on planet Earth or, you know, evolved from apes, so that we have no real purpose. We have no identity. So these practices give me purpose and identity.
I see.
Because we don't have it. If there is no true God.
Wow, what a delusion. Then you mentioned mediums, and I don't know if we need to cover that because we did an earlier broadcast because that's what you were doing.
Right.
That's gaining spirit guides and mediating
Correct.
Secret information from spirit guides to others.
Exactly.
So we discussed that. Then there's this Ouija board that most people have seen them. And again, the idea is you're going to learn secret information.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, I looked at it as a game when I was a kid. But it's not a game. I mean, you were really opening up the door to demonic entities. You know, I think a lot of these early experiences do open doors or make those doors more comfortable to be open when we've had a positive experience in playing these games as a kid. Hey, let's play with demons in the occult today, Jimmy. What do you say? Oh, sure, that'd be fun. Oh, we had a great day. Gosh, we talked to demons all day, Mom.
Yeah,
now, of course you'd never.
but it was amazing how many parents open their kids to the occult under the guise of some sort of game.
Well, of course. Well, my mom bought me my deck of tarot cards.
Wow.
She didn't know what they were.
Because they don't know. They don't realize this is real. It's not just a parlor game.
Correct.
And then you mentioned channeling. When was that? About 20 years ago, that was a big deal that you heard about it on TV. There are these people that were supposedly channeling.
Right.
For some entity in the universe, and they had all this information.
Correct. Now, they're a little bit different than mediums in that they would be channeling a spirit, of course demonic, to a large group of people. Now, I knew a person that was in town that was a channeler, and, I mean, not bad money when you're charging, you know, $10, $15, $20 or more for people to come in and have this spirit talk to us from wherever he is. So the channeler would do a similar type of meditative practice that I would in order to move their self or their personality or their will out of the way so this spirit could speak through them. And then they would not just give specific revelations, but they would give revelations for the world. So it was not a personal reading, but a reading for the earth.
Didn't some people think that these beings that were channeling their personality through a person were actually extraterrestrials or something like that?
There was all sorts of theories that it was a being that had been here before the planet was born, or that they were extraterrestrials, or that they were a person that had lived long ago and had great wisdom. And so you'd pay, you know, $20, $40, whatever, to go and hear this bilge and somehow give insights into your life.
Well, I remember when that was popular and you heard about some of them and read articles about people going to it. What happened to that? Now you don't hear about it.
I guess he retired. He made enough money, and I think he's living in Florida in a gated community.
I get it. Okay, on to the next deception. That one ran its course, right?
Yep, pretty much.
Then I've run into this. I've actually seen Christians doing this, aura reading.
Oh, this is really a pretty silly one. They believe, and certainly human bodies have a positive and negative charge. I mean, if you walk across a carpet, you may have some electricity built up. And we, of course, have a certain vibration based upon the movements inside our body. So there is an energy of us. But what they believe is that there's an energy that surrounds us that is visible only if you learn how to view it. And by learning the auras that go around a person, you can detect their feelings or their problems, and even goes as far as detecting medical problems.
So then some people make money by reading somebody else's aura?
Right, right. And so if there's orange flames coming out of your head, well, that means something. If there's green coming out of your arm, that means something else. But I never admitted this in class, that when we went through this whole aura bit, that I never saw anything. I never saw colors. You know, I cheated on that exam.
You weren't that good.
But you know what was interesting? Even though I didn't see the colors, I was able to make determinations about the person's state of mind. And you know how I did it? Observation.
Wow.
The same power we all have, in that we can observe if the person we know, you know, we have expressions on our face.
Yeah, right.
And we can predict what that person is going through, sometimes even by the tone of their voice.
Okay. Yoga, I don't think we've covered that yet in any detail, have we?
I don't think so, no.
Let's talk about it, because it'll become important to us as we understand this is coming into the church.
Yeah, that is probably the most surprising thing I've seen, is that yoga is not just a series of movements. You know, a lot of people think of yoga, when they think of America, that it's a body exercise or a group of positions that one does with their body. But yoga is a philosophy, and it means to be yoked with Brahman. It is a worldview, not quote-unquote an exercise. So there's more to yoga than just a bunch of body positions. But the reason I've made this point many times, what is the purpose for a Hindu or a Buddhist to perform yoga? It is a spiritual exercise. It is not to stretch the limbs so that they can be stronger and better. It is positioning the body in a certain way to make salutations to different gods.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? And we did one of our seminars. Remember we showed that blurb about yoga where even the news people were interviewing, here's the Christian yoga, and then they interview the actual yoga. The people that really do yoga from Eastern religions are saying, you can't divorce this from its religious connotations.
Not at all.
So these positions are actually prayers to false deities?
Right. Right. I had found an article where it was a group of yogists who were Hindus who were really upset that America was defiling their religion by turning it into a mere stretching exercise. Because they consider this, you're destroying my religion. You're somehow turning my religion into something that you can put into Christianity. They were offended. It wasn't me. You know, I'm just repeating what they're saying by saying, you know, to equate the yoga exercises with Christianity is like us taking a baptism and turning it into a mere swim. That's not what it is. They said that a yogist isn't a great athlete. He is a higher developed spiritual being.
Wow. So now the reason Eastern religions that use yoga do so is to be unified with what, the their idea of God or the universe or the cosmic mind or something like that.
Right. Many of the positions are to align the spine, and this aligns the chakras so that you can be more receptive to what God has to bring you. So what I tell people all the time, it's an interesting thing. I've done this to a few people, and if you ask the question, why do you exercise? People say, well, to lose weight, to be stronger, to be more fit, to be healthier. But when you ask them why they're doing yoga, the answer is always a bit different. To relieve stress.
Oh.
Really? Why that? Because the main part of yoga is the meditation.
Yes. That reminds me of that video clip we showed at one of our conferences. Remember, in one key spot, the Christian instructor was saying that you had to be silent if you want to hear God.
That's right. So she's saying that yoga hasn't influenced her thinking. That was Sudden Burdenkircher, who wrote the book Christian Yoga. It obviously had. Because if that's her idea, that somehow you have to get silent and then God will talk to you, well, that's the main theme of the rest of the book when we'll get there, is it's a form of contemplative prayer. It's a method to silence the mind so God can speak to you. So these people that believe that yoga is harmless, it does influence your thinking because the main part of it is the meditation. And if then people will tell me, well, I'll just eliminate the meditation. Well, if you're doing that, then why don't you choose a different series of stretching exercises and be done with yoga completely? You can use Pilates. You can use the exercise where you're on that big silver ball. There's all sorts of exercises if you want to achieve something. Why don't you just skip yoga if you're going to skip the meditation anyway?
Well, because they want the spiritual aspect of it, and it's disingenuous to claim that they don't.
And it's really hip and cool. And the problem with Christians is we're not hip and cool. So if we bring in yoga into the church, all the hip people will come and join, Bob.
Wow. It's too bad that people are so deceived. So don't be deceived. Yoga is not neutral. It's not a stretching exercise. It's a Eastern religion designed to connect you to the cosmic mind of the universe or whatever deities they conceive of in the Eastern religion, right?
And, of course, it's forbidden because in Deuteronomy 12:29 through 31, in this section of the Bible, God is telling Moses, when you go into that city, I want you to destroy their temples and do not imitate them. And there's a great line where the person is almost saying rhetorically, how shall I serve God or worship my God in the same way they did? And the response from God is, you will not worship the Lord your God in their way. So I'll tell every yogist, anybody that's involved in it, they always at least admit this. The origins of yoga are spiritual and of another religion, correct? They'll always say, well, yes, it is. What's the Bible say? You shall not worship the Lord your God in their way.
Absolutely. The next topic here is reincarnation. Is that something that every New Ager believes?
Almost all of them. Almost all of them. They don't usually believe in a final death. That view will vary from person to person. But most of them have adopted the Eastern worldview that this is a cyclical thing, that who knows what you were in a previous life. The main belief system in Hinduism is that the reason you are the person you are is based upon past lives. If you're a miserable, poor person, you are paying, in a sense, for your past lives, whatever you did wrong. The only problem is you don't remember what you did in your past
life.
Doesn't
that kind of underlie the caste system in India?
Exactly.
You wouldn't expect somebody to get out of their miserable condition because they got to go through it to pay for something they did.
And unfortunately, here's what's interesting. A lot of people perceive these religions as to being so generous and wonderful, but they ignore the poor on purpose. They do not help poor people. That's why they resented Christians coming over and helping the poor. You know, you're wasting your time. If you help that person out of his poverty, he's just going to be back right back here on the next lifetime. So it's best to let them live in squalor because they're paying for a past life. Then when they die, they paid for these things that they can't remember, and the next life they'll come back better.
Yeah, so you got to correct what you did wrong, but you can't remember what it was anyhow.
Well, what they'll say is through transcendental meditation, you'll be able to remember your past lives.
Oh, brother.
Well, that's what I used to do. Part of the exercise we used to do is do past life regressions.
Oh, my.
You know what's always interesting? Everybody, when they go in their past life, is always someone significant. And I used to make the joke, nobody ever past life go back, well, I went my past life and I found that I hauled dung. That's what I did. I was in the Middle Ages and I hauled dung. That's what I was doing. I was a dung hauler. Nobody was ever that. They were always some famous knight or something.
Somebody really important.
Yeah,
I thought you made a good point in your book where you pointed out that in Luke 16, where you have the rich man and Lazarus, if it were really true, so the rich guy is get a good life because he's worked his way up the ladder of reincarnation and being rewarded for having done better, right?
Yeah, where was he?
Well, in the Bible, he ends up in the flames.
Correct.
When he dies.
So he would have been perceived to be an evolved being because of look at his position in society.
Right. So this is just the opposite of what the Bible says, because the poor man ends up in Abraham's bosom.
The attraction to this belief system, it means that there's no final judgment. The attractive thing is that, well, in my next life, I'll be so-and-so. A lot of people just say it almost as a joke line, as if it's true. Well, in my next life, I'm going to come back as a rich person, or I'm going to come back as this or that. But really what they're wanting to deny is that they've got one life, and if they fail to follow Christ, that their life ends in judgment.
Right. It's appointed unto man once to die, and after that, judgment.
That's right, and that's what they want to avoid, and this is a philosophy that's easier to accept.
Boy, that thing of literal future judgment is a very important issue because we keep referring to this debate I had with the emergent church leader, and I can't help but think about it because the emergent church is so close to Eastern religion in their viewpoint. And I asked him about final judgment, and he wouldn't affirm that any such thing existed.
They can't.
Because if it does...
then that means that they're going to face judgment.
You just can't tell everybody it's all going to work out and we're just going to make the world a better place to live in.
And
all paths lead to God.
Yeah, and that really cuts down on the number of people that will show up, especially young people, because they don't want to hear about judgment either. Not this society.
Yeah, I thought it was ironic when you read the books of some of these guys, they claim to be red-letter Christians because they follow Jesus as if that were better. Well, I was just getting ready for my sermon tomorrow, and I was reading the red letters, and in the red letters, Jesus said that at the end of the age, the angels were going to come and gather out all of the tares and burn him up in a furnace and purge him from the kingdom when he sets up his kingdom. That's red letters. How come they never read those red letters? They just read the red letters about doing good deeds to the poor.
Well, you know, Bob, I believe that that was probably mistranslated. I'm sure. It seems that all the things that I don't like in the Bible when I was a New Ager were conveniently mistranslated.
They were mistranslated. Okay. Now, another category is the self-empowerment, self-help. And I got a question about that. Okay, I was reading your book, and I see that category. It's a valid category. I've seen that on TV, the Anthony Robbins, the self-betterment. But don't you think it's ironic that Eastern religion that denies the reality of the individual self ultimately, now, which is the New Age doesn't necessarily tell you this, but Hinduism says that the real problem is that we think we actually exist as separate beings.
Correct.
And that our consciousness is a real thing, whereas actually it's just an emanation of God's consciousness. And so everything has to draw back into God so that there are no more categories. And then that's the ultimate state, right? Is that right? Is that
Are you trying to say that the New Age is contradictory?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Well, that is true. That's why it's so confusing to wade through these things. In that where you have this version of reality that people have adopted from Eastern religions, that all is illusion, all is Maya, is what they call it. At the same time, you're trying to achieve the best of all in this world by being more self-empowered, more rich, more satisfied. Well, what's the point of being so wonderfully rich if this is all an illusion anyway?
Right, and if you really believed the Eastern religion this stuff comes from, it would be counterproductive to empower the self, because that's making you more believing in this illusion that the self is real.
And then you got to come back again in the next lifetime anyway.
Exactly, until finally you reach nirvana, which is this loss of self-identity.
And then apparently once you've gone through all these particular lifetimes, at the end of it, if you've achieved the top-notch lifetime, well, then you're just absorbed back into being, into the big mass of whatever they believe it to be. And once you've achieved that, well, you know what happens after a while? Here's the theory. I can't believe this. You get spit out and back into the circle again. So you start all over again.
You never get done with
it. So you're never done. Ugh. What a joke.
Sounds terrible. So self-empowerment, self-help. So how do they bring religion into that whole genre of writing and seminars and stuff?
Well, it depends on who's giving it. You know, a person like Tony Robbins, you know, there isn't, you know, even though Tony Robbins was back in the 90s, when I talk to young people, they don't know who he is.
Really?
I've found that I'm going to perhaps have to find a new person.
So what happened to him? Is he sitting on an island that he bought or something?
Probably so. Apparently he still writes, he still has seminars, but I think he's more popular with the baby boom generation because they remember him. But when I do seminars for young people and I'll point out Tony Robbins, I'll ask how many have heard of him, one or two hands will go up.
Okay.
And really, when I was thinking, okay, maybe I should update this and replace this with someone new, there isn't. We have moved on from these practical self-empowerment to the spiritual.
Guess what, though? I read an article that had a theory about that, and it's shocking theory, but here's the theory. Yeah, I remember the 80s and 90s, fill auditorium. How to be your better, you know, self, and how to self-empowerment, all this stuff. It went away. The whole genre kind of, where is it? Somebody wrote, it was taken over by the churches. In other words, you go to one of these health, wealth, prosperity churches, and you get self-empowerment teaching every Sunday. Or you listen to Joel Osteen.
Yep.
On the TV. So the evangelical churches has taken over Anthony Robbins' whole
You're right. I just thought of that when I watched Joel Osteen. All that I could think of was there's Tony Robbins doing pretty much the same thing, except he's got it a little bit more in the Christian realm.
Exactly. So you can go to one of these mega churches. Not all of them are like this, but a lot of them are, and get how to release stress, how to be your better self, how to have a better life, how to make more money, how to make the right decisions.
But within the religious context of Christianity.
Exactly. So the churches took over the whole milieu of self-help. So if you go down and rent the auditorium and spend a lot of money and say, yeah, I'm going to tell you how to do this, people go, I heard that Sunday in church.
Well, I think the other part, while it was rejected, was it leaves people a little cold. And I think that if you tie these two things together with spirituality, they seem a little bit more comfortable, because people want to be wealthy, but they want permission from God to do it.
I see. So you got a religious reason to do the old greed thing that everybody had anyhow.
God told me last night I'm supposed to be wealthy.
What do you
know?
So I
need to pursue that.
What do you know?
Yeah, I don't think there's too many people that are living in Laos as Christians that get the same message for some reason.
We've got a couple other topics I want to hit before we close here. One of them is this whole idea of the higher self, the guided imagery. What's that all about?
Yeah, creative visualization and guided imagery. I want to explain this very carefully because some people get a little confused about it. There is ways of using our imagination that the New Agers believe that if you can practice, in a sense, a idea, or if you want a particular outcome. My example is this, is that all of us certainly practice things in our minds before we do them. You know, if you're playing golf, I don't know, I'm sure there's been many times where you've thought out the move, the stroke, the club, how much your downswing is necessary to get the ball in the green.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all good athletes think through things before they do them, and maybe they'll practice in their mind. There's nothing wrong with that. We do that all the time. But the difference with this is that you believe by that imagination in your mind that that will cause it to happen.
Okay.
That's
so maybe we could say the difference is between reading a putt in your mind seeing the break and what the ball is going to do mm-hmm. and where it's going to move and thinking how you want to stroke the ball and then doing it with thinking my mind is going to make the ball go in the hole.
Right. And the other way I show as an example is that my analogy is a young boy is asking a girl out for the first time. It's one thing for him to practice the things he's going to say. Hi, Jane. Geez, I really like to take you out. Or, gee, would you like to come to me? You know, he's thinking of different ways to say it. But this is another way that I've heard in the New Age. I see Jane smiling. I see Jane saying yes. I see Jane accepting me. Then I am trying to manipulate the outcome by the power of my mind.
Yes, so that's mind over matter. Right. I remember Dave Hunt warned about this back in the 80s in his book, The Seduction of Christianity, and he was heavily criticized by some people saying that, no, these sort of things really aren't shamanism or the occult, but they are. And,
it is.
And he made some of these same distinctions. There's a difference between thinking about what you're going to do and then actually doing it and trying to manipulate reality by your thoughts.
That is exactly the distinction. That's why I want to make that clear. But here's something interesting. The person that really invented the phrase, if you will, was Shakti Gawain and invented the phrase creative visualization. Now, he says this. According to Shakti Gawain, creative visualization can easily introduce the practitioner to spirit guides, the likes of which would be thrilled to meet us.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure they would.
Satan would like to have a wonderful plan for your life, and he's got somebody to introduce you to that plan, and it's going to be real wonderful until you hit the final judgment, and then it's going to be shown to be a grand delusion. Well, we don't have time to cover all of these things. There's so many things.
I know.
And you can get Brian's book at onetruthministries.com, right?
Correct.
But he covers goddesses, the Gaia hypothesis is interesting. I wrote an article about that myself one time, that the earth is some sort of a goddess or being. There's right. crystal healing, shamanism, drumming in order to create an altered state of consciousness, the labyrinth. We'll probably talk about that at some point because it's coming into the church.
Correct.
Remind me to come back to the labyrinth.
We will. Labyrinths.
Labyrinths. I don't know. I don't have one. Somebody was telling a story in our Sunday school class that there's a Lutheran church here in our city that built a new building, and they have a labyrinth built into the church.
Oh, yeah. That's really popular. You got to be hip, Bob. You know, before you put the carpeting down in the new place, why don't you have a labyrinth?
Yeah. I'll just stick with the regular carpeting. And so on and so forth. Obviously, Satan's very open-minded. There'll probably be new practices that somebody will dream up yet in the future and sell right. to unsuspecting people.
Yep. And the whole point of this particular chapter is to give people a snapshot of what the New Age aspects are. But again, I came back to the central theme. No matter which practices are involved in, the philosophy is always the same, that all paths lead to God, that you can be autonomous, that you can have access to secret knowledge for self-empowerment. That is the central belief system of the New Age.
Okay, so thank you, Brian. Next week, we'll talk about Chapter 7 of your book. This is Critical Issues Commentary, the radio ministry of Twin City Fellowship. Perhaps you'd like to contact us. We are cicministry.org or twincityfellowship.com. Or you can contact Brian through onetruthministries.com. Thank you for listening to us. We will see you next week.